The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. We have continuing coverage of presidential hair breaking news. Gary, yeah, what's the latest?
I don't like it.
President combs his hair different. Everybody freaks out.
I disagree with the president's hairstyle.
We have from the beginning. I think we've been very clear about this.
No, I like I mean the new one.
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah. I think we've been very clear that he is not to change his hair at all.
No.
Yeah. So that's something that we have been very strong on. Look, we're going to call him out when we disagree.
He needs to put a tariff on hair products.
All right. What do you think happened? You think he fired his hairdresser? I bet he did. I bet he fired the hairdresser. They got a new hairdresser.
Well, Jared wasn't doing enough.
Yeah, exactly. Steve Bannon wasn't available. Sorry.
I just had to say it.
Can you imagine after 45 years, his hairdresser calls in sick? The entire world freaks out.
I mean, it's sort of like a comb back. Right?
I mean, it's just, you know, it's no longer what I used to call was gratuitous comb over. Because he didn't, you know, it's not like he was trying to cover anything up, really.
No.
He just had a comb over. That was just his style.
Yeah. I've done that before because my hair is all over the place. And so sometimes I'll just let it fall. And sometimes I will comb it back. When I comb it back, I look at him. Nah. Yeah. And I will tell you, the first time, and when I saw it over the weekend was yesterday when I'm on a plane and just going through the news, and I see the picture of him, you know, at the church.
Right. Yeah.
And that was the first picture.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, the president. And I'm looking, going, where?
Right.
And he's...
Yeah, where is he?
There's only the one guy standing there. Where's the president? I didn't even recognize him. It's like, oh. It's a new do.
Yeah. Looks fine. Come on, people.
Look.
Let it go.
Look. At 72... I don't know. I honestly, did you think it looked nasty?
I never said nasty. That's fake news.
We are forced.
Yeah.
We are forced to talk about something that we could care less about.
We're forced to talk about a lot of things we could care less about.
I know. We are forced to talk about something that we would normally not even want to give one thousandth of a second of thought to. To start out today's show, we must tell you the definitions of the word nasty.
Yeah, right.
Because the media will take some... Number one, I could care less about Meghan Markle. I've said this before, and whenever I say it, some people say, well, you need to respect people's culture. I do. But I don't care about it.
No.
The royal family, I don't care about it. As I said before, I'm an American.
Yeah.
We broke away to get away from crap like that.
Yeah, I haven't cared about it in 240 years.
We don't like to pretend that somebody is special because somebody at one time in history said that the family was royalty or special. There's no such thing as royalty in the United States. Get over it.
Hold on a second. The Kardashians are royalty. Everybody keeps telling me that.
Is that passionate enough?
Yeah, I think
that I sound angry.
You know what, though? I've got a serious concern, though, about the hair. It just hit me. Because I saw another picture from another angle. Remember the movie Dave?
Yes.
Well, I looked at the president's eyes look different in one picture. Like, they almost look like they're a different color. Yeah. I it's probably just the lighting.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he doesn't have bangs anymore. But it's, now I have to wonder if, you know, they're putting in a stunt double and they've got him locked in a room somewhere and won't let him out.
Oh, man. That was the
doppelganger.
Worst. That was the worst.
Like a Trump doppelganger would be able to walk the face of the planet for the last 2.5 years with no problem at all.
No, nobody could. No one could pull it off. No one could pull it off.
There's no one that could do that. There's no one that could do that. I've seen a couple of guys that do really great Trump impressions, and so they do the whole getup. They, you know, they the wig, everything. When they're out and about, I mean, people will just stop and take a second look. There's no way. Nobody would get away with it. No. As long as we engage in all of this stuff about, because Sunday it seemed that was the news. You know what wasn't the news on Sunday? I saw it only in a couple of places and I had to look for it.
The stuff that really was the news?
Impeachment. You asked this question last week. Where does it go after Mueller's statement last Wednesday? Where does it go from here? How long? We always ask that question.
Well,
it's one that I think that you've come up with this basic concept of, all right, let's measure this 1 week out. Where's it going to be next week? Now, it works both for and against the president on the Mueller thing, of course, and on his statement. Where does the impeachment talk? Where does everything go by this time next week? And then on the tariffs with Mexico. You said on Friday, well, we're not going to really, you know, get into it. We have the discussion, but there's no way to make a definitive judgment on it, really, until he actually does it or walks away from it. And over the weekend, they at least seem to be slowing their roll on the whole Mexican tariff thing. But I didn't see much on, you know, we saw stuff on Mueller, but I didn't see much on impeachment. And I'm wondering if that is gone. I'm wondering if the Democrats are barring the door.
The only thing I really saw over the weekend that was a major news item was Adam Schiff said, we can't win this.
Right.
By the way, I'm paraphrasing that.
Right. Which is a huge thing.
And the other story was because he had said that 54 members of the House have come out publicly and said impeach the president, and that's not enough.
No, they're going to have to get to 218.
Right.
You know, so, which is what we said from the beginning. If they want to get to impeachment, they've got to get to 218. When Nadler was ramping it up and they kept saying it, and then Nancy was against it, then for it, then against it, we said, really, it only matters what the soft head count is, and if they're not anywhere close to 218, they're not going to approach. You know? With the exception of, okay, let's help our far left wing, let's help our radical wing get their street cred. So let's give Maxine Waters a moment, basically.
Well, other than that,
we're not going to move forward.
We'll get to all this in just a little bit because Barr was, as I told somebody, I said, they said, "What do you think? What did you think?" Well, by the way, thank you because I was busy all weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I had a quick travel to New York and then back, and my flight was delayed. I've got I got 2 hours sleep here before I came in, but I hadn't slept for. I got an hour sleep in the 36 hours previous to that,
right?
Just because of flight delays and cancellations and thunderstorms. But it was Friday morning that I woke up before I took the plane flight,
mm-hmm.
where again you had already texted me.
Yeah. Right.
And it was, you know, you're like, show's done.
Yeah, right.
You know, exactly. Barr, because Barr had given his speech.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asked over the weekend, somebody asked me, they said, well, what'd you think about Barr's speech? And I said, normally I don't practice political idolatry,
mm-hmm.
but that was about as perfect as you can get.
Yeah.
And I know he got a lot of, the criticism that he gets is, he's taking the president's side. No, he's not.
No.
He's not taking the president's side. He's taking the side of the law.
Yes.
If the side of the law happens to be the side that Trump is on, well so be it.
Show me where Trump broke the law.
Well, show me, as I asked somebody on social media the other day, tell me one thing that Barr said that was wrong.
Right.
tell me one thing that he, and they couldn't do it. And so the only thing you're getting, the only argument you're getting is he's taking the side of Trump. Well, so's Jonathan Turley and Dershowitz.
Right.
Jonathan Turley, who is a constitutional law professor who does not like Trump, did not vote for Trump. Dershowitz does not like Trump, did not vote for Trump, all taking Trump's side. So are they taking Trump's side or are they taking the side of the law?
That's, you know, there's the big thing that really got to me over the last, well, a couple of weeks, especially the day that Barr came out and released the report, right? When he came out and released the report, you know, he had Rosenstein and the other guy standing behind him. Sorry. Right after that, Chris Wallace was on Fox News. You know, they do the immediate, okay, what did, right. You know, what did, and, you know, well, he sounds like he's the president's personal attorney. No, he sounds like he's stating the fact of the law and tell me where he's bending the truth at all.
And my first reaction, if I would have been there with Chris Wallace, to say that's a political hack comment.
Yes, it is.
Because precisely tell me where. Where is he? Is he wrong on the law? If Barr was wrong on the law and defending Trump, I'd be the first to say it.
Well, it's like saying if you want a good economy, that you're on Trump's side. You're just defending Trump personally. No. I'm defending a good economy. I'm defending what it means for everybody. And I'm defending justice in this case because you haven't proven anything, Mr. Mueller. And so my question would be, well, if that's what Barr sounded like, what in the world did Mueller sound like to you? Because I'm tired of these deaf ears that it seems like, and I'm sorry, but it seems like people like that say that are just saying it so they can seem centered and unattached. Anybody who listens to this program knows that we don't have a problem going after the president. We started this program with it. That hairdo is horrible. I'm just joking. It's fine. It's fine. But the
no,
point is that
I don't like it.
But the point
it's
is
nasty.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so is the royal family.
Now, by the way, I will tell you what we will coming up here. We will go through the actual definition of nasty.
Okay.
Okay. We are forced to do that.
Right.
I don't want to talk about Meghan Markle. I don't care about the royal family.
No.
But I'm forced to do it because of the mainstream liberal media.
Yes, and this is something that we're forced to do time and time again. And we don't know how much effort. Seriously, I'd love to be able to measure the manpower that was dedicated over the weekend to the word nasty in newsrooms. Hey, this nasty comment, get on that. Come on, Jenkins, get on that. Who's on the nasty comment? In a newsroom somewhere. Who's on the nasty comment? We got four people, sir. All right, we better order pizza. It's going to be all day.
Well, then when the president came out and said, I didn't call her nasty. Yes, you did. There it is, right there, nasty.
Right.
No, not in that context of the word, because
right.
The word has two distinctive definitions, and when used in a particular context, means something that is completely different than used in another context.
Right. Especially if you've been covering this president at all.
Yeah. So we'll get to that coming up here in a little bit because we have to read the transcript and go through it. Because
you people.
No, it does make our job fun. I will say this. Because
it's a break.
I never thought that I would be a radio talk show host having to define the word nasty.
Yeah. You know, we got a little bit of a break here from all the serious stuff. I mean, who cares about impeachment or possible criminal wrongdoing by top members of the Justice Department violating citizen rights? Come on. National debt, $22 trillion. Who cares?
Nasty. That I by the way, that national debt of ours is really nasty.
It is nasty.
And
that actually is nasty.
Yeah, and in the worst definition of nasty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also coming up on the show, Barr's full interview and what he had to say, Devin Nunes calls the Mueller report a fraud and suggests that he purposely left out information which changed the context. This is on the The former National Security Advisor for a week.
Michael Flynn.
Michael Flynn. Mm-hmm. This is on the whole Michael Flynn mm-hmm. transcript that came out.
Right.
And Devin Nunes said, wait a minute, a couple of sentences were redacted. Those redacted sentences made a completely different, showed that, no, that was not obstruction that was going on. And then that was quickly dropped over the weekend. It's like we go through this all the time. It's like they take the shot. Oops, we're wrong. And we back off. Even on Nasty. We take the shot. We were wrong. Okay, we'll back off.
Yeah, right.
But he did use the word, but not in the context
mm-hmm.
yeah. that you stated. So that coming up here in the New York Times reporting the president is thinking of putting tariffs on Australia. Mm-hmm. Trump's head of his economic council is leaving. Trump's numbers are improving. And a whole bunch more coming up. As normal, we got so much to talk about today, plus your calls and comments. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. So, yeah, there was the story all over the weekend that the president called Meghan Markle nasty.
Yeah. Okay.
And one must understand there are two definitions of the word nasty.
Okay.
We went to the dictionary.
All right.
First definition, highly unpleasant, especially to the senses, physically nauseating. And then there is definition two for nasty.
Okay.
Behaving in an unpleasant or spiteful way.
All right.
Okay.
Doesn't define you as a person. It only defines certain behavior by you.
Exactly.
Or said person.
Here was the context. The reporter asked Trump or said to Trump, Meghan Markle can't make it because she has maternity leave. Are you sorry not to see her because she wasn't so nice about you during the campaign? I don't know if you saw that. Trump, I did not know that. No, I did not know that. No, I hope she's okay. I did not know that. No. Reporter, she said she'd move to Canada if you got elected. It turned out that she moved to Britain. Trump, there's a lot of people out there moving to the U.S., so what can I say? No, I didn't know she was nasty. Reporter, is it good having an American princess then, Mr. President? Does it help that link? I think it's nice. I think it's nice, and I'm sure she will do excellently. She will be very good. She will be very good. I hope she does.
Yeah.
So, the term nasty was used in the second definition of the word. Behaving in an unpleasant or spiteful way. He was not saying that Meghan Markle was highly unpleasant, especially to the senses, and physically nauseating.
Right. Of course, none of the media focused on her comments, right?
No, not at all.
For Travel Centers of America, here is your forecast.
We're going to see warmer temperatures in the west and cooler temperatures in the east and south. That's the pattern for the next couple days, and hopefully that breaks the trend of the massive tornado outbreak we've seen over the past couple weeks. The areas over the next several days that'll be seeing the most precip, the southern plains and Midwest. We can expect upwards of 5 inches of rain for the state of Oklahoma over the next 7 days. Now, that band of showers will move through southern Kansas, Illinois, and Indiana. A little less rain for those states. But there are many farmers in Nebraska, Iowa, and portions of Kansas who just may not plant a crop this year due to the excessive rainfall. Of course, flooding continues on the Arkansas and Mississippi rivers. Expect more evacuations throughout the course of the week. Warmer in Denver today than New York City. High in the Mile High City, 85, New York, 73. The national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
between pockets of civilization, you can listen live on our app, in your app store, or RedEyeRadioShow.com. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Wow, it was Friday, and it seems like it was years ago. Mm. But William Barr in his interview with CBS, and I want to place something that he said at the end of the interview. Now, they cut it up, you know, and,
right,
and had
right,
interviews,
yeah.
You know, and had discussion, or, you know, with, to the reporter, and then references to different things. But I want to play what I thought was the most impactful thing that he said, because it's something that you and I have said all along. And you don't have to always agree with the president to understand this. You can disagree with the president and understand that it isn't the president, but it is the other side that you have to be worried about when it comes to democratic principles. And here's what he said.
I think one of the ironies today is that people are saying that it's President Trump that's shredding our institutions. I really see no evidence of that. It's hard for, and I really haven't seen a bill of particulars as to how that's being done. From my perspective, the idea of resisting a democratically elected president and basically throwing everything at him and you know, really changing the norms on the grounds that we have to stop this president, that's where the shredding of our norms and our institutions is occurring.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, it's what we said all along, that when you look at everything, when you follow the timeline, when you follow the flow chart, as we have said, and it's very simple to understand. And they accuse the president of committing treason. They accuse the president of colluding with the Russians to hack the election and then change the outcome of the election, is what it ended up. A few months later, and we know that it was the Hillary campaign and the Democrats that took campaign money, funneled it to a former British spy who the agreement is, even from outside watchers, he got the information from inside the Kremlin. Their fear now is that the information he got from the Kremlin was Russian disinformation and propaganda coming from Russian intelligence.
Right. Yeah.
So the Democrats that are so concerned about Russia influencing the election have not yet seen that the former FBI director, the former head of the CIA, then took the Russian disinformation and propaganda and spent a significant period of time before the election investigating the president based on that propaganda, getting a FISA warrant based on the Russian disinformation and propaganda, and then after the election, with the help of the CIA director pushing the legitimacy of Russian propaganda and disinformation from inside the Kremlin, promoted it as legit and wanted it as widely distributed, got to somebody in the administration who got to Obama, who said, open up all the lines of communication. We want to get this information to everybody so it leaks and America can know that this is a treasonous president and all of the information came from Russian sources, Russian propaganda, Russian disinformation, and the CIA director and the former FBI director use that information in order to attempt to destroy the legitimacy of a completely fair and legitimate presidential election in the United States. You want a scandal? I got a scandal. You and I saw that early on. We said, excuse me. The president doesn't believe in democratic norms. Who doesn't believe in democratic norms? And Barr came to the exact same conclusion. That could have come from our mouth.
It's interesting, you know, using the word shredded, because we've talked about how the Democrats, how the far left has really shredded the process. And, you know, it goes back to the late Ed Schultz. This was years ago. I don't know how far back it was, when he said, Democrats, you need to do anything and everything, lie, do whatever to
it
win.
It was during Obamacare.
So that would have been 2009, 2010?
Yes.
So
I think it was after they gave the speech. I think it was in the fall of 2009.
So here we are nearly a decade later. And that's exactly what's happened, not because necessarily Mr. Ed Schultz called for it, but we knew that that was not the talking points, the acting points. That was the call to action. Forget about anything and everything else. Look, we know in the political cycle, any given political party, person, campaign lies. That's one thing. We're talking about shredding the process. Go back to the whole Kavanaugh thing. And this was going to be, we said it, the day Jeff Flake was cornered in the elevator. That's a win for them. Just as it was with AOC winning against Amazon, the largest company in the world, in her district. Because when they use activism and they win, they believe they've won.
More activism will work.
It's going to be the rule of the day. So you shred the process. And you don't care. I would love if we could honestly get the answer. I'd love to know, percentage-wise, how many people in this country don't care about the process if it meant getting him out of office. We already know it's significant. Otherwise, there would have been people shouting, screaming at the top of their lungs before now. But that's not what we have. We don't have people objecting to this kind of behavior. Instead, we have a number of people, that there are some that disagree with it. But instead, which boggles the mind, instead we have people that are supporting it and promoting it.
Well, not surprised when, you know, we covered Antifa. We covered Antifa before anybody else was calling, what was talking about Antifa. Mm-hmm. And that's why we were calling them Antifa, because nobody had actually defined the pronunciation of the word.
Right.
And so we were calling them Antifa because we think, you know, they were Antifa, anti-fascism.
Right.
But Antifa sounds more chic.
Yes. right.
But what they, you know, they were promoting that they were anti-fascist when if you actually look at their behavior, they're fascist because they don't believe in the Constitution. They don't believe in the First Amendment.
Right.
It's very tough. You know, from our perspective, maybe not from other people's perspective, but from our perspective, it's a little tough for you to sell us that you are against fascism when you are trying to shut down free speech.
Right. And using violence to do so.
And using, yes, and using violence to do so. And it's but that's how bizarre it has gotten. You know, and the people that claim to be anti-fascist are the fascists.
Mm-hmm.
The people that claim that it's Trump who is attempting to destroy constitutional norms are absolutely outright that the Constitution is antiquated and needs to be replaced.
Yeah,
everything right. from the Electoral College to the Senate to freedom of speech to freedom of religion to the Second Amendment to due process, unless it applies to somebody who agrees with them.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've said before, by the way, to zero debate, zero. If you do not believe in the First Amendment, if you do not believe in freedom of speech, freedom of religion, if you don't believe in the Second Amendment, if you don't believe in due process, if you don't understand, oh, by the way, I got to make sure I get to it. The Wall Street Journal had an article. Oh, there are Democrats that do understand the Electoral College.
Right.
If you don't understand the Electoral College and the concept of the Senate and representation of the minority, which you claim that you care about.
Right. Yeah.
Until it's inconvenient to you because you lose an election because of it. If you're not concerned about the tyranny of the majority oppressing the minority. If you don't believe in all those constitutional things that I just brought up right there, we've asked the question before, not to be nasty. And I mean that in the second definition of being, you know, mean.
Yeah, right.
Uncivil in any way. But we have to ask the question, Why do you consider yourself an American? Now, many of you don't. Many on the left don't.
How would you define American values?
Right. What to me, American values is the Constitution.
Right.
We've stated this before. We talk about our share. Well, we're all one people because we have shared values. Well, we don't have shared values.
No.
There are people that want the. They don't believe in the Constitution of the United States. I was thinking yesterday. I mean, it was a thought that ran through my head when Hickenlooper got booed for saying socialism is not the way, and he got booed at that. You know, the California. Democrat thing
yeah,
that was
right,
going on.
Right.
And he got booed, and I went, wow, they boo God, and they boo capitalism. Okay, they're making that evolution to communism, aren't they?
Well, keep in mind, you know, during the Obama years, after Obama was elected, they came out and said, well, if you're saying that this president, being Obama, is a socialist, that's the new version of the N-word.
Yes.
And that became the talking points. And we said at that time, we said, well, wait a minute. There is a guy, Bernie Sanders. Of course, he didn't run then. But there is a guy, Bernie Sanders, who says he's a proud socialist. It has a definition. It's not calling someone by a name. It's defining the ideology they're promoting. It's like nasty. It's a behavior, not necessarily defining the individual.
Okay, now we need to have a discussion.
What if you're a nasty socialist?
That was my next. You were reading my mind. My next point is socialism nasty by the first or second definition of nasty,
right?
Or is it all inclusive?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, many people would be without. So
well, social. Well, I mean, I find it. You know,
remember Bernie said we have too many deodorants. If you don't have any deodorant under socialism,
well, you're going to stink.
You are going to be nasty.
Why, that would be physically nauseating.
Yes,
you're right.
It would.
Bernie was upset. Think about this. By the way, that's a great point, though. You know, we don't need to talk about the intricacies of the difference between social. We don't have to get into talking about, you know, the proletariat and intelligentsia. All we have to do is, you know, look at it and say something simple. Who in the hell walks around in the store going, damn it, we've got too many deodorants.
Yeah, exactly.
There's too many deodorants. We're wasting resources.
Right.
Who thinks that way?
Right.
Bernie Sanders.
That's your answer. We're wasting too much. In other words, capitalism has too much room on the shelf. The government should be taking care of your underarm deodorant. Oh, my gosh. And if you did, it would be really horrible.
Hey, you know something? There's a ton of different body washes out there, but I had a small bottle of the 24-hour body wash.
Mm-hmm.
And with what I had to go through over the last 24 hours just to make sure I got back here to do the show, thank goodness, Bernie, that they make that 24-hour. They have the 8-hour, the 24-hour, the 16-hour.
Well, it's like financing a new car. Now you can get 96-hour.
Now, I don't know if that's scientifically proven.
I don't either.
Okay, I can't say because I have
48 hours and 10 minutes in. The lab guys are going, no. Take a shower.
Because I have showered before I came in tonight.
But, good. That's good.
But just think about that. I mean, who thinks that way? Who walks in and starts, we've got to do something about this. This is a travesty.
We have too many choices.
Look at the choices of deodorant that exist out there.
Yeah.
That's a waste of resources.
Right.
We need to have just one or two. Who needs 50?
Yeah.
It's something that we look at as the beauty of the system that we live under.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'd love to get one of each and send them to Bernie's office. Huge box.
Use them, please. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, known as the Nasty Boys.
Okay, now we got to go back to the Janet Jackson song. That was one of her songs. I think that was her first hit.
Was it really?
Nasty.
Nasty. Oh,
yeah, I was a top 40 DJ back then, so yeah.
You had to play that?
Huh? Yeah, I had to play it a lot.
You have been tortured in life.
Yeah, I had to play it a lot.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
A lot. I never had to play that, so. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
All right, coming up in our nasty second hour.
Yeah. It's going to get even nastier. depending on the truth of that deodorant claim.
Devin Nunes calls the Mueller report a fraud. We'll get to that in a little
bit. Yeah, well, that and what else might be going on with that whole side of it. Mark Meadows was out over the weekend, and Jim Jordan and others talking about it over the weekend. We'll talk more about it coming up.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. Good morning. Thank you so much for being here. I had a good weekend.
Yeah? What'd you do this weekend?
I flew out Friday night, went to New York. All right? So all right. I took the direct flight Friday night. So I got in about 11 o'clock.
Right.
All right. Dad was still up. Talked to him for a little bit. Went to sleep. As soon as I woke up, had to go right to my great-nephew's basketball game. He plays at an AAU league for 10-year-olds, 9- and 10-year-olds. So I went to that. Then we had a family brunch. Then after the family brunch was over, went to one of our favorite restaurants. After the family brunch was over, had to go back to his second basketball game. So then his second basketball game was, when that was over, went back to my parents' house, got an Uber, and headed over to a buddy's house. We went to a concert. The concert was over at about 10:30, was back home by 11. And then I was going to be on the direct flight back on Sunday morning, and that got messed up because of thunderstorms, and it was, oh.
Yeah.
I've got about 3 hours sleep, really, since Friday night. But I got 2 hours sleep before I came in. So I'm actually doing pretty good. And I'm going to sleep big time when I go home. But I wanted to just make this point. One of the Uber drivers that we had, and in fact, when I was heading back from the show, so not we, it was me alone heading back to my parents' house, spent about 30 minutes with, you know, talking with the Uber driver. It was that long of a ride. A man by the name of Hassan from Saudi Arabia. Hmm. He's here because his wife is here for education reasons. She's getting a degree and whatever, I dig into the specifics, but whatever they have between Saudi Arabia and the United States, she's over here.
Right.
So here's a guy from Saudi Arabia. They're going back. So he's not an American citizen. They're just here temporarily. He's going back in 2 years. The most unbelievable conversation that you could ever have.
Hmm.
In that 30 minutes, we picked each other's mind.
Right.
And I've got to tell you this. It is a little sad when you meet somebody from Saudi Arabia and within the first 5 minutes, you realize that he knows more about the U.S. Constitution. He has studied the Constitution. He understands the law. He understands freedom. He understands liberty. And I was telling him, because we got into this discussion, I said, on the show that I do, we get into, people will ask, well, what's your political philosophy? And I said, I told him, my political philosophy really comes down to what the founding fathers of the country wanted. And I said, and I've mentioned this on the air many times, it really comes down, people, well, you've got a complicated political philosophy. No, I don't. I want to be left alone. When it really comes down to it, that's what I mean, freedom is really being left alone. Nobody telling you what to do. No one. And we went through this whole thing, and he was just, I can't tell you the joy the conversation brought to me, but even it seemed to be more joy to him. He was so excited. I don't think he wanted me to get out of the car.
Right.
And so, you know, I did ask him some questions, and he has doubt that the royal family in Saudi Arabia will take them where they need to be. But we also talked about, and he did agree, that because of the oil situation, that it will be a good thing if Saudi Arabia is forced, as you and I have talked about, because then we start talking about economics and trade and everything else. And if you want to be part of the world economy, how you have to be more accepting towards other people's culture. And that's the beauty, because outside of the profit motive of capitalism, the thing that's never talked about is people voluntarily cooperate with each other. When you voluntarily cooperate with each other because of both you have your self-interest at heart and you cooperate, then you must be willing to accept other people's culture. And if you're going to diversify as an economy,
right,
which I have no doubt that the Middle Eastern countries can do, Saudi Arabia can do it. They're an advanced society, well-educated society that can do it, but you have to be more accepting of other people's culture. And he's just like, yes, 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 yeah. Just, I mean, it was such a wonderful conversation. And when I got out of the car, I got a little disappointed, saying, I can't have this conversation with half of America.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's sometimes you have to, I think, fully understand the fundamentals before you can fully appreciate the fundamentals. And we've heard that time and time again over the years, people calling us saying, you know, when I came to the U.S., this is what I learned. This is what I learned about the political system. And we still have people writing us that listen outside the U.S. And tell us that they hope we're not going down the road of socialism because they've lived through it. They know what it is. They know what it's like not to have freedoms. They know what it's like to have to be, essentially, you have to be dependent on the government for more and more things every single day, and your liberties go away.
The one thing, we got into a discussion and on race, and one thing that he wanted me, and bigotry and intolerance and all that, like I said, wonderful conversation. And yes, I did give him a 5. I rated him as a 5. Funny thing is, we talked about Uber's business model too.
Right.
You know, and I've just said, I don't see the business model. He says, neither do I. He said, they've got to change. And I've said, well, part of the reason the stock price, you know, was lower was because they're thinking the fact that they're going to have to raise the fares.
Right.
Because we got into a conversation. For all the people that are Uber drivers the first 5 years, those are those people that were most excited for that kind of job, right?
Sure.
So the millions of people that went in, if you disappoint them, can they be replaced with other people who aren't as excited as that first million people that said, this is really what I want to do, and then they find out, well, economically, it's not the business model that I want, and I can't make as much money. Is that the problem that Uber's going to face in the future? Is once you disappoint that, you know, work, and it was a great, like I said, it was a great conversation talking about, you know, management of a company whether another company is going to come in and do it in a better way. So, but the one thing he wanted me to know, and he said, you know, let everybody know, he said that the media, that when you hear the United States media, And he said, the media is not the United States. I said, yeah, we know that. Hmm. He said, this is the least racist nation. He said, I believe on the face of the earth. He said, I've been here now for 3 years. He said, you can tell the accent that I have.
Mm-hmm.
It's obvious I'm not, you know, from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I have never had one bad experience with any person ever. Everyone has opened their arms to me wherever I've gone. He said, like the conversation we're having now, he said, people want to know. they're very inquisitive,
right.
You know, about, he said, it's the complete opposite of the way, oh, they're intolerant. People actually want to know what, you know, my culture and what my country is about. They want to know. They're more inquisitive. He said, I have not had one anything close to any type of racial experience with anyone. He said, now, the difference is, he goes, you've got to work hard here.
Yeah, I mean,
said, you know, really have to work hard here.
Right. Well, and I've heard that from friends who come from other socialist nations that have a greater degree of socialism. They're not socialist right. countries necessarily, but they have a greater degree of socialism and socialist programs. And I had one friend tell me, oh, no, it's great. You know, you shouldn't have to work too hard. And I thought to myself, no pun intended, but that is so foreign. That is such a foreign thought to me of having, you know, this just sitting around. We're not talking about vacation. We're talking about sitting around and not doing anything every day to the point where you're only working a certain number of hours per day. I know that doesn't apply to everyone in every situation in Europe, and that's where this guy is from. But it does apply to a great deal of them, and they embrace it. A three-hour lunch? Oh, yeah. Everything shuts down for lunch for 3 hours. And I thought to myself, you know, I don't get that at all. We are one of those nations that is, you know, grabbing a sandwich on the fly so that we can work harder. But the point is not that we have to work harder. We actually are driven to work harder.
Well, and that's the conversation that I got into. I said, you know, the culture that I come from is that you work hard and you prefer the unknown, the fact that society doesn't tell me that I have to work this job.
Right.
Nobody is molding me to do a particular thing because the state tells me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but that's what I want. I said, people talk about, well, you know, happiness. I said, I don't want happiness. I said, people say, what's happiness is, I want freedom. I don't want the state dictating to me what makes me happy by taking care of me. I want the freedom to be able to work hard. And I said, I would rather work 80 hours a week. I said, I have in my life many times. I'd rather work 80 hours a week, work extremely hard, be able to save that money. And then we started talking about the concept of capitalism and owning more of your wealth, which means you get to experience the opportunity that freedom has. And like I said, he's throwing up his hands as we're driving going, this is just great.
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself, wow. Maybe I could do a talk show in Saudi Arabia. Maybe not.
Maybe not
today,
there.
Today, let's criticize the royal family.
Yeah, let's not do that. You probably shouldn't.
<It's>
I don't know. Are they nasty?
That's
different royal family. Here's the thing that, you know, the entire, disappointment for me is that you had generations before that created greater efficiencies in our capitalist system, greater opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Think about how much we can work, how productive we can be today based on the technology that is available to us. We will talk about that and people will complain. Yeah, but it forces you to work so hard and long hours and everything else. But look at all the great benefits on the other side of it. The other side of it provides a wealth of information that saves lives and can in a very short period of time based on the work that came before us by others. What was put in before those long hours. So to believe that the long hours today don't benefit society tomorrow, whatever it might be. But innovation is one that I focus on, because whether it's a smartphone or some kind of medical technology, it is something that has saved lives. I think about my granddaughters having phones, and sometimes I want to pull my hair out, but I'm grateful that they have the phones, limited usage, according to their mom. They have those phones because they can communicate. They have those phones, and they have to learn the lessons of communication
and everything that comes with it. It is a responsibility. But at the end of it, all of this technology leads to what? A greater society, a safer society, a healthier society.
Yes. A more free society.
Yes.
But it was, I thought it was just, and I wanted to relate the conversation. After I knew as soon as I got out of the car and heading across my parents' driveway to their front door at 11 o'clock two nights ago, I was saying, I have to bring this conversation up on the air.
Right.
Because it just, as great as it was, there was a little bit of, I could not have this conversation with half of America.
Right.
There is a completely different, and we've talked about this before, that our base mindset is completely different. We actually do think differently than liberals. There is a different mindset completely where on the base level, it's very tough to even start a conversation because they are, and I'm not saying, I said liberals. I'm not putting all Democrats in that because I've talked to Democrats all the time. I've got family members and things when they talk to me and they know me so they don't start out in rage. And as I told you, husband of one of my relatives last year told me, you know, when we were talking about Trump, he goes, I'm a professor. Mm-hmm. I'm in college. I'm liberal. And he goes, yeah, they overblow this big time. He said, if my father loved Trump and if my father was alive, he'd support Trump. My father's not a racist in any way.
Right.
And so when they throw that out there, they go, it really does defeat the purpose because they said, it doesn't do anything. You may be solidifying your base who also hates Trump. He said, I may be a liberal. He goes, but I don't hate. I disagree. Yeah. I don't hate. Mm-hmm. But a lot of liberalism today hates. But that was the only sad part was when I thought about this and I said, I just had a conversation with somebody who's lived his entire life except for 3 years in Saudi Arabia. Now he's in the United States and just wants to, you know, throw out ideas and let people know that he understands what we have here and how special it is.
Right.
And to see that and to see that the majority of Americans who are born into unbelievable wealth and they go, well, I'm not wealthy, the billionaires, as we've stated before, the average poor person today in poverty lives the life of a billionaire from 100 years ago. Hmm. The only thing you don't have is the land and maybe the size of the house, but everything else is better than what billionaires had 100 years ago.
Yet it's not appreciated.
Not appreciated.
And the opportunity is still, I think, fully untapped.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller & Associates Incorporated on inspections. A driver's role in an inspection can mean the difference between a positive or negative experience. Well-trained drivers who behave professionally know that goes a long way toward achieving a successful inspection. Drivers who are rude and inconsiderate might hinder, not help, their situation. Some tips to help the experience go smoothly include being courteous and professional with the inspector, keeping your vehicle well-maintained and your equipment clean, asking questions of the inspector, and sharing basic information. You should honestly and respectfully answer questions, but be sure to avoid discussing sensitive topics like training procedures, work assignments, accident and safety procedures, or other company business. Seemingly innocent comments to an inspector could raise red flags and result in a wider investigation. Remember that your preparation and behavior during an inspection are important to the success of the inspection. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller & Associates Incorporated. Visit us on jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Mike in Boise, Idaho, about my conversation with the Uber driver from Saudi Arabia yesterday. Hi, Mike. Welcome.
Hi. How are you guys? Hey, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
That did get me excited hearing about the Saudi Arabia guy loving our country.
Yeah.
And the Constitution. I think we need to encourage kids to get out in the workforce for the first 2 or 3 years after high school so that they don't get propagandized by their Marxist professors and see what the world is really like.
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, and when we talk about young people today, especially when they go to college, I mean, the bias and the prejudice is unbelievable what's being taught by the liberal professors.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's bias and it's prejudice and it's stereotyping. Every group, you know, has to think a certain way. And if you don't, then you're not an authentic member of that group.
Right.
It's really unbelievable how liberalism has become so biased and bigoted.
As we pointed out, those groups are becoming more and more splintered. So how do you manage that? Yeah. And how does anyone communicate with each other on a real basis? It just boggles the mind.
They're loaded for bear. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. I want to play some audio here and make comments on two different people that we have used and played a lot on our show. And the reason that we have is because we think it's important to find people who are intellectually honest, who may not like Trump at all, but when it comes to being intellectually honest on the law, look at it and say, it's a witch hunt. but I want to play, Alan Dershowitz was on with Howard Kurtz yesterday.
All right.
On Fox News. And talking about, you know, Mueller's testimony last week or his whatever that was, his statement, his final statement last week. And I just want to play a little bit of this because it's interesting as always.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with what he's saying here.
How do you think the media have covered Bob Mueller, especially in his televised appearance this week, perhaps as an upstanding figure trying to get at the truth?
No, I think what's happened is the media always substitutes wishful thinking for careful analysis. If there had been a Mueller report about Hillary Clinton or a Democrat, and Mueller had done the same thing he did here, that is basically say, look, if the information had proved that he was totally innocent, we would have said so, many in the media would have attacked that as beyond the scope, the proper scope of a prosecutor. The media does not pass the shoe on the other foot test. That is, if the political parties were reversed, the media would not be consistent. It would always accept kind of its ideology over reporting. And I think particularly pundits, the reason so many pundits have been wrong in predicting things, and the reason I've been right about predicting almost everything is not that I'm any smarter. It's just that I don't substitute wishful thinking for careful legal analysis.
Now, you say that until his televised appearance, you were basically defending Bob Mueller as not being a partisan who favored one side or the other. First of all, did you get a lot of grief on that from your liberal friends?
Of course I did, and from both sides. I get grief from both sides constantly because I don't satisfy either side by my hopefully neutral analysis. But I had never thought that he was a partisan. But when he made that statement, he not only put his thumb, he put his elbow on the scale. It was clearly intended to encourage impeachment by the House. First of all, it is not the proper object of a special counsel to do the investigation for Congress. That violates the separation of powers. It's Congress that has to do its own investigation and has to take political responsibility for doing it. When they shunt that off over to special counsel and special counsel takes the responsibility, it really destroys our system of checks and balances.
I just want to stop it there for a moment. I mean, that is such a great point. Now, we understand that our listeners understand the separation of powers.
Yes.
But remember that the vast majority of Americans cannot name the three branches of government, which means if you can't name them, you don't know them, which means then you don't even understand the balance of power. You have no idea why the founding fathers, The founding fathers that are criticized consistently and the majority of Americans have no idea that their initial purpose was to ensure in the Constitution that you could not have a concentration of power in one particular area. And the majority of Americans don't even understand that. So it's very, I think it's very important when Dershowitz brings out that when you think about it, this is the executive branch. Because that's what it is. It's the executive branch and the special prosecutor basically telling telling Congress, I've done your investigation for you. Now go impeach. Think about that.
Yep.
And you and I, by the way, Dershowitz has mentioned before and mentioned in this interview that, you know, earlier he thought that until last week, he didn't think that Mueller was partisan. Look, I credit Dershowitz for his intellectual honesty in so many areas of the law. I disagree with him on some portions, but at least you can have a discussion with him. And he understands that if you disagree on it, you're not a Nazi. You just disagree with him as to the interpretation of the Constitution. But these days I find myself agreeing more with him than against him on constitutional issues. But I will say this. For him not to see that Mueller wasn't a partisan before last week, to me, there's got to be some blinders on there.
I think it's more about, for him, likely about decorum, although he hasn't been afraid to call anyone out.
Are you saying that I lack that?
We both lack it. And for those who think we lack decorum, shut up. but the whole idea, though,
don't be nasty.
The whole idea, you know how many different deodorants I use at once? The whole idea is we're going home because this show's over. No, it's that I think Dershowitz and a number of others didn't want it to be about Mueller until the work came out, until there was a full demonstration of the work. And it's because there was a possibility until last Wednesday that we weren't going to hear from Mueller again, that the report would speak for Mueller as it should have, which is funny because I said that Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, hours before he came out and spoke. I said, well, you know, his statement is, I mean, you know, him testifying, he doesn't need to testify. His work does that for him. His report is what his testimony is, and he actually said that during his statement. But the point being, I think a lot of people just kind of didn't want to engage on that part of it until they got all the facts in. You and I kind of throw different possibilities
right,
out there.
But we said right up to the Mueller report coming out, we don't know what he's investigating. So we did give Mueller the benefit of the doubt. Because we didn't know.
Right.
Now, there was no indication, and our concerns were we thought it would be a biased investigation because there was no indication he was going down the road to look at what would have been the best evidence against Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what you're looking at, you're looking for the best evidence that Trump committed collusion, because that's what your job is as a prosecutor.
Right.
Well, if you don't go down the FISA warrant thing and then investigate the FISA warrant and then investigate Russian influence, because remember, that's the other thing that was brought up over the last couple of weeks. Yes, but we found out about Russian influence, and Mueller, that even should make the fact that he didn't go down the FISA warrant avenue and then find out that it was Russian disinformation and propaganda that was being disseminated by the Democrats in order to destroy the legitimacy of the 2016 election.
Right.
How can you say that you're not partisan? And so that's when we knew he didn't go down that path, that's when we said he was partisan. There are more in the media now following on that. But the fact that, you know, I just was surprised that Dershowitz didn't see that. Because that's when we really said that it was
post-report, yes.
Post-report,
that's a fair
biased.
Point. And I think that's where we held it. And then it changed post-report as we digested more and more of that report. Because, and maybe it's different for someone like an Alan Dershowitz, who has been debating law and interpretation of law all of his professional life. You and I have been, we are clear. I think we have developed the skills to see that partisanship, that political hackery, if you will, which is alive when we see everything play out. supposed to report, we were able to see it because it's what we look for.
Right.
Trying to give the benefit of the doubt really wasn't an option for me, even though I have zero experience debating the laws and interpretation of the law compared to an Alan Dershowitz. But I think that probably was his approach, just trying to leave it open and not really go down that road. That's why I think Wednesday, Alan Dershowitz and the fact that he said, look, there's no doubt now that this was politically motivated. That's why I think Wednesday didn't help the Democrats.
No, it didn't.
And I think more evidence of that is not just Alan Dershowitz and his take on it now and his very unobscured vision on Mueller and what he was trying to do, but also the whole impeachment thing. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but the tone changed, and it changed Wednesday.
Well, and you made the case that it seemed like impeachment, except for Adam Schiff and coming out and stating, well, we can't really, I'm paraphrasing here, but we can't win this. So,
right.
There really was, and then that started coming out, all right, 53 members of the House have publicly supported it, and that's not close to getting impeachment. And you and I both wondered in our pre-show meeting, is that the end of it? We'll get to more of that coming up, but I want to play a little bit more of the interview that he had with Howard Kurtz. This is Alan Dershowitz on Mueller's statement from last week.
But if Mueller was trying to encourage, as you say, pro-impeachment Democrats on the Hill, he wasn't exactly explicit about it. In fact, when he quoted the Constitution as saying, well, there's another remedy for this, it's not the criminal justice system, he was quoting a DOJ memo, about not being able to indict a sitting president. So what makes you so sure? Because this has been the media line that he's urging Congress to impeach, and I didn't hear those words.
Well, you didn't hear those words, but I thought the music was quite clear. And if he learned nothing new during the report about the Justice Department regulation or about the Constitution, on day one, he knew he could not indict a sitting president under Justice Department regulations. And so really the question comes up, why did we have a special counsel at all? Why didn't we have a nonpartisan, independent expert commission looking into Russian efforts to influence our election, which are continuing in the 2020 election? That would have been the way to go, especially in light of the fact that we now know that the Justice Department and Mueller concluded that the result of this special counsel could not be the indictment of the president.
Right. Well, part of the reason people would say that it was good that Mueller had the investigation was a nonpartisan commission can't indict Russians, can't indict people like Paul Manafort and Flynn and some of the others who got caught.
What benefit came out of indicting the Russians? The Russians can't be charged. Manafort was indicted for something unrelated. As the judge in the Manafort case said, prosecutor wasn't interested in Manafort. They were just interested in squeezing him to make him sing, perhaps even compose, against President Trump.
Right.
And so what was the purpose of that? I just think it was a futile effort, and it would have been much better to have a nonpartisan investigation like we had after 9/11. If the nonpartisan investigation comes up with evidence of crimes, then that could be turned over to ordinary prosecutors.
It's interesting because on the conclusion of what he said, Jonathan Turley, another constitutional lawyer who does not like Trump, did not vote for Trump, said this: the most curious and significant decision by Mueller was refusing to reach a conclusion on presidential obstruction. While entirely ignored by the media, not by us, so Mueller contradicted himself in first saying that he would have cleared Trump if he could have, but then later saying that he decided not to reach any conclusion on any crime. He already had addressed why Mueller's interpretation of memos from the I have already addressed why Mueller's interpretation of memos from the Justice Department of Legal Counsel is unprecedented and illogical. He concluded that in barring the indictment and prosecution of a sitting president, those memos meant prosecutors can investigate but not reach conclusions on possible criminal acts. It is not just his legal interpretation that is incomprehensible. Mueller was appointed almost 2 years before he released his report. He was fully aware that Congress, the Justice Department, the media, and the public expected him to reach conclusions on the criminal conduct, the basic function of a special counsel. If he also was told that he should do so by the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General, yet he relied on two highly controversial opinions written by a small office in the Justice Department. Over those 2 years, Mueller could have asked his superiors for a decision on this alleged policy, barring any conclusion on criminal conduct. More importantly, he could have requested an opinion from the Office of Legal Counsel. That is what the Office of Legal Counsel does, particularly when its own opinions are the cause of confusion. One would think that you would have to be even more motivated to do so if you intended to ignore the view of the Attorney General and his deputy that there is no such policy. Look, it was bogus.
Right.
Of course he could have done it.
Yes.
An indictment is not an indictment. Excuse me. A conclusion is not an indictment.
Nope.
We said that from day one.
Here are our findings. Here are the facts.
Right.
That's our conclusion.
Plain and simple. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. So, you know, you said that to me one of the first things in our pre-show meeting, Eric. You said, wow, it seems like the impeachment thing, except for Adam Schiff, which and his statement was, doesn't look like this is going anywhere.
Right.
Like it died down this weekend. Well, Mueller's not going to, who's going to testify? Mueller's not going to testify. Barr's not going to testify. So there's nowhere to go unless you harp the same old thing, and there's no more new information coming out.
Right.
And so now are we heading into a quiet time where, well at least until, because now it's June, the Inspector General's report could be coming out at any time. And so you wonder what the Democrats' strategy is at this point.
Well, you know, we said, too, before they even got to, before last Wednesday, when Nadler was going off on the new obstruction of, you know, McGahn and Barr not responding to the subpoenas and appearing before Congress, we said, look, that's a lot of noise. Kimberly Strassel at the Wall Street Journal a few weeks ago wrote, what does Nadler really want? He wants the show. Well, this is where Mueller put it back into his court and said, essentially, here's some impeachable stuff, in my opinion. But they had moved away from that by then. So it went quiet after Wednesday. I wonder where it will go this week, if anywhere.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across the world and America. 866-90-RED-EYE. Good morning. Thank you so much for being here this morning. It is a wonderful morning.
I can't believe it's Monday already. Where's this week gone?
By the way, my favorite headline was Eric Swalwell says CNN should think about leaving Georgia over the anti-abortion law.
Yeah.
That was my favorite.
Right. They should all, everybody just leave Georgia. All liberals should leave Georgia. You know, Stacey Abrams would have a hard time getting elected. I think it's, oh, wait, she was elected.
Yeah, you keep forgetting that.
Yeah, that's right. She won.
It was those nasty Republicans.
Exactly. The whole boycott thing, it's so disingenuous. You know, Hollywood saying, well, we're going to boycott. You know, I think we should consider, this is the most commitment you'll get out of some of them. I think we should consider this. If the bill becomes law, I think we should consider boycotting, not working in Georgia. And I thought, well, wait a minute. Hollywood has been boycotting Hollywood for a long time because they go elsewhere to seek lower tax states to do their work in. It happens all the time.
Yeah, you know something? Hollywood's pretty hypocritical because they're always looking for the bargain. They're always looking for, and, you know, they're looking for those tax subsidies
right.
that a heck of a lot of states will give them, and a lot of the states that do that are red states.
Yes. So they'll go there and they'll, you know, film a movie, a TV show, whatever it is.
Remember Michael Moore for all of his leftism. Remember the union problems he had?
Right.
I'm not going to film here. I'm going to go to where there isn't. I don't need to have a union.
Right.
That's why what he says, well, that and among a thousand other things is why whatever he says rings empty all the time.
Well, and to that point, I wonder how much of that stuff altogether rings empty with even the most adamant protester.
Well, it was Iger from Disney. His right. comments the other day, and someone said, do you understand who your audience is?
Right. Do you know?
Do you know who's buying your DVDs?
Right.
Do you know who's going to see your movies?
Right.
Do you understand? And there was, I'm not sure where I saw the article. Might have been the Wall Street Journal. This goes back about 3 weeks ago. And they talked about how major corporations are staying out of that debate completely. And they talked to sources inside major companies that said, can't win. It's 50-50.
Well, this is what, on the very principles of it, it is 50-50 in terms of who supports it, who doesn't. But beyond that, even with the protesters, you can't win. We've talked about this before. Imagine, I mean, if you're going to be an activist corporation, right, which there are such things, you know, Gillette, other companies have come out and they use activism in their marketing. Why do they do that? They're trying to appeal to a certain group. But more and more, the groups are splintered, as we pointed out. So even with the activists, you don't get full street cred. You may think you're a champion for the cause, but they don't need you anymore. They don't need anyone else anymore to do their bidding. Like AOC, I'm the boss.
Well, remember the thought of Amazon 5-6 years ago.
Right.
Loved in liberal circles,
oh,
were they
sure,
not?
Sure. Because it was going to be, remember, that's also back when they
Apple.
Thought they had won the world.
Right. Apple, Google.
when they thought they had won forever. During the Obama years, they really did. Not all. Again, nothing applies to all. But a number of them thought it was, that there was never going to be a return to whether it was a Republican being president or anything else. Then all of a sudden, you're the hero now. This was years ago, but you're going to be the demon tomorrow. And it doesn't matter who you are on the left. If you're an activist at all, if you're going to jump in, you're going to get called out eventually. You're going to get shamed by your own side eventually. And that's inevitable. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Well, remember, the heartbeat law specifically, the vast majority of Americans believe, that's a good starting point.
Right.
Remember, we looked at the polling from last week. So you have the left jumping on this that you have Nazis there, but when you actually talk to the average American, they're like, "Yeah, that's a good sign that life begins is a heartbeat." They would agree with that, and we brought you that poll last week. So they talked to sources. You know, these people wouldn't even look. I'll talk to you, but on the condition of anonymity. And they said, we don't want to touch this. We don't even want to get involved in it. And they talked to how many companies refused. The majority of companies they called, no comment.
Right.
No comment. Mm-hmm. They don't want to even touch. They don't want to be on either side of it. And some of the quotes were, we don't want to be on either side of it because this is 50-50. You can't win this. If you sit there and you take the liberal side on it, you've just alienated half your audience. Mm-hmm. If you take the other side of it, you've alienated half your audience.
Right. And that's on the very principles of the discussion, the debate, or the topic, whatever it is, the issue.
Well, that's right. And a lot of them say, we're selling soft drinks or we're selling deodorant.
Right. Exactly. Well, and so then it gets down to, okay, but even if you only care about the activists, if you only care about one side of it, you still can't win. You can't win today. You may think you're going to, but eventually you're going to get called out by whatever it is, by whatever group it is. There's going to be a new subgroup tomorrow, and they're going to call you to the carpet I don't know, based on anything, everything, but it's inevitable. It is going to happen.
Well, look, we take the perfect example. Gay pride parades held all over the country yesterday.
Mm.
Who are now viewed as the biggest oppressors of the gay movement in this country?
Lesbians.
Martina Navratilova.
Mm-hmm.
Julie, I can't think of her other name, the one that testified on the Equality Act. I mean, well, by the way, Biden came out yesterday. The most important thing of his presidency, the first thing that he will do is push for the Equality Act, which is what? Anti-feminist.
Right.
And anti-lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
But viewed the opposite way.
Right.
And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, you need to shut up about this, because if that's going to be, and that what he said, that's the number one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, okay, let's be honest. The average American, if you ask them what was in the Equality Act, they would have no idea.
Right.
And I thought to myself, I said, okay, is he viewing something that Americans don't even know about? But if he says, first thing I'll do is the Equality Act, they don't know what it is. They don't care, but it sounds good.
Right.
And as the testimony, and then you saw the big story last week. What was it? Track and field.
Mm-hmm.
Who won the whole thing? A man.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, again,
think about that, Eric. Think about you think about how that sort of backfired. Remember, just a couple of years ago, if you were a state that said no, a man is a man and a woman is a woman. Look, you can be whatever you are. I'm tolerant.
You can live however you want.
You can live however you wish to live, and that's fine. And you can say, I don't have to accept it. Well, that became a huge issue. That sort of died off. And now you're seeing a pushback. You're seeing it now as men are starting to dominate in women's sports.
Right.
And it was almost the fact that people were in the media. Oh, no, you better call them. You can't call them a man or a woman. You need to call them what they believe they are. No, I don't.
Well,
it was, I know we've done it, and most conservative media has done it. Look, you can be whatever you want. I'm extremely tolerant. I don't care what you do in your personal life.
None of my business what you do.
I could care less. And if you want to believe whatever you wish to believe, but if you're, as Candace Owen, I believe, said over the weekend, she said, if you're telling your kids that a boy that you're a woman, if you wish to be, then you might as well tell them that they can be a different species. And we know that's already happening.
Mm. Right.
We know that. Mm-hmm. What is that called now? Trans animal? The people that say, I'm really a dog, or I'm really a cat, or I'm really... And people say, well, you're taking it to... No, how do you know? A person is what they... If you actually believe... In what you're saying, that a person is what they believe that they are, who are you to judge?
Well, and we've talked about transracial. We don't even have to.
No.
That's not even something where you have to give an example anymore.
No, not after Rachel Dolezal.
Because so any kind of equality act, tell me how you have equality when anyone and everyone can be anything they want to be simply by saying it.
That you can.
There are no protected classes. When you say equality, you're saying everyone is equal because that's the idea.
Well, everybody isn't equal. The person who speaks the truth is an outcast.
Exactly. And this is the point I'm getting to. They use words like equality. That's not what they're looking for.
No,
they're not looking for equality at all.
And so I thought it was interesting that on Gay Pride Day that the two biggest oppressors now of the gay movement in the United States and worldwide are two feminist lesbians.
Wow.
Think about that.
Yeah. Well, and one of them is an icon, really.
Yeah.
From her era.
Martina Navratilova.
Yeah.
And viewed as groundbreaking.
Right.
And now she's the oppressor.
Yes.
Wow.
And that's the world we live in. So I don't know how, if you're an activist, we asked, this was last year that we were asking this, going into the presidential election season, the next one, how do any of the activist politicians catch fire? How do they gain
a momentum that is needed, that is necessary. And those that are not activists that will have to pretend to be activists for a moment, like Biden on Sunday. How do you do that? Well, first of all, that's a complete loss. That's a wash. That one, that's a non-starter. But the activists, where are they? Bernie is an activist, but he's really not. He's a promiser.
Well, that was, I mean, it was brought up by a couple of publications bringing it up, saying, where is feminism against, you know, because the Equality Act was being promoted like crazy on Gay Pride Day.
Right.
But it's people that are gay that are actually protesting it.
Yes.
If you want to, and saying, what are you doing? You're going to kill feminism.
Yeah.
There is no feminism. There's such thing as women's rights if a man can be a woman. I don't believe we even have to say that. It's almost, and this is, you know, part of the discussion that you and I have. How do you even discuss with liberals who are telling you you're wrong? It's like, well, no, I'm telling you, you can think whatever you wish to think.
Right.
You have the freedom in this country to do it. And if you want to dress whatever the way you want to dress in your personal life, you can do it. And nobody should hurt you physically for that.
Right. Exactly.
That's wrong. To attack anybody is absolutely wrong. And you can be whatever you wish to be. I don't have to agree with your opinion that is not based on any science at all.
And I don't have to change the science.
Right. I don't have to change the science. And I don't. And if I don't agree with your falsehood, it has nothing to do with the fact of whether I like you or whether I hate you.
Right.
It's simply observing reality.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. You can't have that discussion.
No.
You can't have that.
That's been gone for a while.
You can be the most liberal person out there. You can be a groundbreaker like Martina Navratilova, and you are now marginalized within the gay community.
Remember a few years ago when it was our colleague Ben Shapiro who was the bad guy. It was only people on the right.
Right. Yeah, great point. Right, when he was on Dr. Drew.
Mm-hmm. Not anymore.
Nope.
You can be kicked off the Baltimore Mayor's Council for LGBTQ for saying something that is fact.
Right. And you get fired and you're accused of violence because you refuse to call a man who was able to get into a woman's prison by stating that he was a transgender who then ends up raping women, and you call him a man and you are accused of violence.
Right.
And you are fired for that. And she is the one that testified before Congress against the Equality Act, and she is a feminist lesbian.
Yes.
And said, feminism will be destroyed, women's rights will be destroyed, gay rights will be destroyed because of all of this. And the couple publications made note yesterday, said, where is a feminist on this? They're completely quiet, and it's almost as if the gay community is quiet on the whole transgender thing, like they're afraid to hit it.
Right.
Because they will be marginalized. They've seen what has happened to two different women, high-profile women, and one of the most highest-profile women in the gay community in the history of the world.
Right. One of the first.
In sports.
Really. If you think about it, in sports.
Yes. And that's what Eric and I have said. And when we said a long time ago, people said, oh, it's ridiculous. We said, look, liberalism is going to implode because they now have created so many victims and so many oppressors that eventually the victims will end up being the oppressor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're seeing. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Interesting times we live in. I'm just reading this headline from Fox News. Nude models gather in New York City to protest Facebook and Instagram's female nipple ban.
Okay.
And then what was it? Who was it? Well, I can't think of her name. Oh, the actress who posed nude in order that we all accept our own bodies.
Okay.
And what's her name?
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about.
I don't know. I didn't follow the story. But any type of protest like this, I'm thinking to myself, well, wait a minute. That's about you accepting you. What you need to do is look in a mirror while you're not wearing clothes, not take a picture and show it to everybody else.
I don't accept my body, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
That's why I wear clothes, but I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
I cannot accept my body and be okay with that.
I want the world to accept me fully clothed. let's work on that first. Here's your forecast.
We're going to see warmer temperatures in the west and cooler temperatures in the east and south. That's the pattern for the next couple days, and hopefully that breaks the trend of the massive tornado outbreak we've seen over the past couple weeks. The areas over the next several days that'll be seeing the most precip, the southern plains and Midwest. We can expect upwards of 5 inches of rain for the state of Oklahoma over the next 7 days. Now, that band of showers will move through southern Kansas, Illinois, and Indiana. A little less rain for those states. But there are many farmers in Nebraska, Iowa, and portions of Kansas who just may not plant a crop this year due to the excessive rainfall. Of course, flooding continues on the Arkansas and Mississippi rivers. Expect more evacuations throughout the course of the week. Warmer in Denver today than New York City. High in the Mile High City, 85. New York, 73. The national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Cool. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on the new Red Eye Radio.
Oh, come on. Stop with all the lies. Please.
It was...
We're not cool.
it was Lena Dunham who posed nude for body positivity and loving yourself.
Okay.
And then it was on social media where, of course, she got trolled like crazy on it and... As I said before, look, I lived on a beach for almost 3 years.
Right.
In Florida.
You had a home. You weren't actually sleeping on the sand, right?
No, right. I had a home. I didn't live on the beach. I had a house on the beach.
Okay.
I rented a house on the beach.
All right.
And so for 3 years. Now, I was in my 20s.
Right.
And so, you know, maay then I could, you know, take the shirt off and walk around. These days, I put a shirt on if I'm in my bathroom because I got a mirror.
I wear one in the shower, actually. I figure the soap will get through.
All right, I don't go that far.
Yeah, I do.
And I believe me, I did, as a sociological experiment... I did a lot of examining of the human form when I lived on the beach those 3 years in my 20s.
Right.
I wasn't just like it wasn't recreational staring. It was, you know, it was just like it's not recreational drugs. I was experimenting.
You were experimenting. You were conducting. You were making notes, mental notes.
I was making mental notes.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I did notice is there are some very attractive human beings.
Yes.
And some very attractive bodies on this planet.
Yes.
They are the vast minority.
They are.
Now, I think that in Seinfeld, what was it, under 20%?
Yeah, was that the number? I couldn't remember.
I think it was under 20% of people.
No,
were
it's not.
Tracking.
It's not near 20.
And I think it was George says no. It's less than 12.
See, I was going to say it's not even. I totally forgot that one.
What bothered me is they had numbers in their head.
Yeah, exactly. They've totally been doing some research.
But I have always been like, there's a lot of activists out there. You know, the women activists for. Women being able to go topless. See, I've taken the opposite viewpoint. I believe men should put their shirts on.
Yeah, if we want equality,
yes.
How about guys keep their shirts
yes.
on?
Yes, because from my three-year experiment and study on the beach, I came to the conclusion that we humans are an ugly species, most of us.
Yes.
And I'm sorry to say, but myself is included.
Yeah,
we are nothing. We are nothing to look at. That's why the whole, you know, that's the whole thing. You know, when people say, look, you need to love somebody's mind and soul. Well, I mean, that's out of necessity. You have no choice.
Yeah, I think it's because you're limited on your options there. Yeah.
So for us, when it comes to body positivity, we take a little different viewpoint here on Red Eye Radio. It's basically, there's nothing you can do, so keep your clothes on and don't offend anybody else. We have a non-offensive agreement with the rest of society. We, Eric and I, promise to keep our clothes on at all times. Well, yes. Except when I shower. Eric will keep his on when he showers, but I'm not going to.
I've worked it out. I've got a system. I built a process for it. So, you know, I mean, I exercise on a regular basis, but really, let's be clear. Give that lipstick to somebody else.
Maybe the solution is all of us should wear spandex.
Nope, that's not the solution either. Nope, I'm thinking sweats. I've actually considered a muumuu.
This is an interesting Monday. Topics we have must be due to the fact that I've gotten very little sleep over the last 2 days.
That and Congress, you know, on the summer break and all that. You know,
okay. Yeah.
When they go home, we get weird. That's it. Yeah, they leave us with nothing to talk about.
I never thought I'd have so much fun talking about nudity on my show.
Yes, exactly. Yes, it is humorous.
That's okay. We came up with a new word last week, was it the week before?
I think it's okay to make up new words.
Takeyism.
Yeah, takeyism, gimmeism, takeyism.
Gimmeism, takeyism.
Right. Bernie is a promiser. He's not really an activist. He's more of a promiser. That actually may be a word. If only there were a way to Google it. How many different causes are there today? Do we have a list? Let's start counting. I can name three, but the idea is that the activist mindset, you know, your activism is not your friend's activism. I can even see a set of twins, for example. Okay. Julian and Joaquin Castro. I bet they got different causes. They're identical twins, but I bet they have different causes. You know, because the activists have become split. And it really is this mentality that I don't need a hero anymore. I'm the hero. So remember back when it used to be that a mayor would get shamed for not marching in a parade, right?
Mm-hmm.
A local leader, whatever it is, would not, or a company wouldn't sponsor it. Now you get shamed for not doing it, but then once you're in line in the parade, you get shamed because you're not part of that group.
Right.
You get called out. Well, how would you know you're not one of us? And that's, to me, it's fascinating psychology because I don't know what the end game is. I don't know where you go.
You know, the movie, and I always thought there would be more movies on politically, you know, political political correctness and just the causes and all that. But one of my favorite movies, and not the whole thing, because it's not a, to me, it's a B movie, but PCU. You ever saw with Jeremy Piven?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And
it's been a long time since I've seen it.
And some of it's, you know, some of it's stupid, but some of the best parts are where Jeremy Piven's walking with the young kid. I think it's Chris Young, the actor. And they're walking through, and there's all the cause heads, as they call them. These are cause heads. They have a different cause every day. And as they're walking through, people are screaming different things at them, you know, save the planet, save the animal. And all of a sudden somebody yells, free Nelson Mandela. And Jeremy Piven looks and goes, he's free already. And
just keeps, they've already done that.
And it's like they have a different cause every, you know, different cause every day.
Yeah.
That part of that movie I absolutely love. But you really can't produce something like that that mocks activists, can you? Liberal, because that's what it was doing. It was mocking liberal activism,
right,
big time.
And you're right, because the activism used to be a different side of the liberalism, right? It used to be a different corner, or maybe just a different behavior, right? It wasn't the full time activism of today. Today you're living it. You're screaming it out loud, but there are so many that it goes back to the gymnasium filled with a thousand children screaming all at once. But that's essentially what it is when you have so many different causes and so many different activists that are calling people out. You know, I mean, I wonder if you could make that movie.
Well, by the way, I did love the scene where George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic is playing their party. That was actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
I just keep thinking of the liberal activism today and the fact that they made fun of it. You could never produce a movie. And I was thinking about that the other day when somebody was talking about it. As soon as someone says, well, political correctness, and I say, have you ever seen PCU? There's a couple of portions of it that are just great. When you have, for example, remember the animal rights activists? So they all run upstairs, all the students, and they grab it with Sloppy Joe and Hamburger Day. And they take it all and they throw it all on top of the...
Right.
You couldn't make that today.
No, I'm telling you right now,
that would be considered too offensive. And I still wonder when that movie plays, whether whatever network plays it gets complaints.
You know, that's a good question. Think about that. How many complaints come in on a foreign network that plays anything? Well, we talked about Friends on Netflix. Remember the story that came out with the young people that were binging on Friends, the TV show on Netflix, and said, I'm watching it and I'm laughing, but I really don't feel good about it because this is so wrong. Because the jokes back then, and I remember seeing one of the jokes in passing and thinking, oh my gosh, you couldn't write that today. You couldn't put that, the censors on television, on network television. Remember, that was a Thursday night, high viewership, must-see TV, NBC show. Highly rated. And if that were the case today, I mean, if it were the number one show on a network, there's no way that would get through. You know, forget about your Friends reunion. The world's not going to let that happen because you can't write the same. You can't write comedy the same. You know, Jeffrey Ross, who is the Toastmaster, really, in terms of comedians, he's a guy that he doesn't know any limits. I watched some things. He's doing a new series on Netflix called, I think it's called Historical Roasts. In other words, they pretend, you know, they get people like Bob Saget on the first one played Abraham Lincoln, right? Yeah. Well, and John Stamos played John Wilkes Booth. So, and they're roasting. And it's pure comedy. Oh,
that's funny.
Yeah. It's hilarious, but
it's very politically incorrect.
And they get away with it. But I'm wondering, because we asked about, you know, like a Don Rickles. If there was a young Don Rickles today, he'd essentially have to do what Jeffrey Ross is doing. I would love to ask Jeffrey Ross, what do you run into? Because the guy's not, I'm guessing he's not a far-right conservative, but he's, and he makes jokes about Trump. He did in that first episode of that show, but he does it like every comedian does.
should do, I guess.
Let me ask you this. I was watching some recent Jeff Dunham, and I'm like, whoa.
Right, right.
Whoa. I mean, he's not the Jeff Dunham from even 10 years ago.
Right, yeah.
I mean, he's moved, and some of the stuff he says is politically incorrect, but he's not saying it.
Oh, that's right. His character is.
His character is saying
yeah.
it. And I went, oh, that's how he gets away with it. He's not saying it. The character's right. saying it.
There's some degree of separation.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, it's like
it's
cartoons.
Not me, it's the character.
Well, it's like a cartoon, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have all these actors that do the voices of a Simpsons or Family Guy or whatever it is, but they're not, you know, they don't get the blame.
You're never going to convince somebody on the left, for example, though, that a Blazing Saddles that when we went to watch it did not make us bigoted or prejudiced or racist in any way.
Right.
It was so obviously mocking it.
You're mocking bigotry. That's what the whole point is. That's right. where the laughter comes from. You're mocking the bigotry.
What do you do? I mean, part of the society understands that completely and the other side has no clue.
Right. Yeah. And I would love to have them all in a room. Could you imagine? Mel Brooks
I thought you meant everybody arguing this out. I'm like, got that. All the screaming kids in the gymnasium. Yeah. No, but you mean
all these writers, directors, and people who, what can you do today? What do you think you can and can't get away with?
Yeah, but they wrote all this, what would be considered offensive material today, and they're offended by Trump.
Oh, easy.
Think about that.
Yes, right. Yeah.
They wrote what would be considered by the left the most offensive material.
Well, Rob Reiner was all in the family.
Right. And Trump is offensive to them.
Right.
Really? 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up following the top of the hour, you know, we said this on Thursday and Thursday night, Friday morning show. Didn't really live by it because said I really don't want to talk about it for another week because and end up talking about it and getting some, it was always some comments on it, but the president and the things, you know, talking about the tariffs on Mexico and all that. I sort of came to, I don't know if it's a conclusion, but it's something that I wondered over the weekend. And it's something that you and I have talked about that seems to have gone unnoticed, that the president, on one hand, has been selling to a significant portion of his base that he's a protectionist. But when the trade deals actually come out, he's not. I wonder if he's hearing flack on that.
Yeah.
Because he is.
Right.
He came out the last few days with some really protectionist stuff. We're losing to Mexico. Well, you just did a free trade agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Your free trade agreement didn't do anything to stop the trade imbalance. Why are you screaming?
Right.
It's your people that did the deal.
Right.
I wonder if he's hearing about it. Because when we talked about it on the air, we really, a lot of his populist supporters were very, very surprised to find out because he has so much rhetoric on tariffs, but that's not what's in the actual trade deals.
Yeah, I do wonder, and also there's, you know, some more focus on China. Now it's believed there's at least a question as to whether Xi and Trump will even meet at G20 later this month in Japan. So it makes you wonder where it goes from here if the president actually does go the full measure with Mexico.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.